Imagine walking into a hospital waiting room, right? And on your left is a patient who weighs, say, 150 pounds.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, totally typical. But then on your right, there's a patient who weighs less than 1 pound,
Oh, wow.
right? And the doctor on duty has to treat both of them back to back with the exact same level of precision, using equipment that somehow needs to adapt to both of those extremes without missing a single heartbeat.
It's honestly a staggering amount of physical variability when you think about it. I mean, in human medicine, that scenario just doesn't happen.
Yeah, you have pediatric wards, adult wards.
Exactly. Each is outfitted with specialized gear. But in a veterinary clinic, a massive, stable Great Dane in room one and a fragile, critically dehydrated ferret in room two, that is just a standard Tuesday morning.
It's wild. And to keep both of them alive, clinics rely on this piece of technology that, frankly, rarely gets the spotlight. I'm talking about veterinary infusion pumps.
Yeah, the unsung heroes at the clinic.
Absolutely. So today we're doing a deep dive into the source material to cut through all the technical manuals. We want to show you how matching the right fluid dynamics to the right animal is. Well, it's the ultimate high-stakes puzzle.
It really is.
Because we aren't just talking about buying a gadget here. We're talking about matching mechanics to life-saving workflows.
Right, and the core function of these devices seems quite straightforward on the surface. You know, they basically replace the old school method of manual drip rates.
Like staring at a bag and counting drops.
Exactly. Instead of a veterinary nurse standing over a patient, counting drops, falling into a little plastic chamber, and rolling a tiny clamp to guess the flow rate.
Which sounds incredibly tedious, by the way.
Oh, it is, and prone to error. So these devices allow for programmed mechanical delivery of fluids, medications, blood products, or even nutrition.
Okay, got it.
But because of those wildly different fluid tolerances we just talked about, what is a life-saving drop of medication for a Great Dane? Well, that could be a catastrophic overdose for a ferret.
Right, a total disaster. So, since patient sizes vary so wildly, the very first step in this puzzle is the hardware. Specifically, the two main categories the source document outlines. You've got the veterinary infusion pump and the veterinary syringe pump.
Yeah, and while they both move liquids into a vein, they solve entirely different physical problems.
Okay, so how do they differ in practice?
The practical difference really comes down to the source container, the flow range, and the level of low volume precision.
Let's break that down.
Sure. So let's look at the standard veterinary infusion pump first. This one draws fluid from a hanging IV bag, pulls it through a long plastic tube, and pushes it into the patient.
Right, in the sources note, this is basically your workhorse for bulk volume. Like it's used for routine maintenance fluids, correcting severe dehydration, or just providing fluid support during a routine surgery.
Exactly. You'll often see it used for crystalloid fluids.
Which is basically what? Standard water with dissolved electrolytes.
Pretty much. Where the goal is sheer hydration over a period of time.
Okay, so that bulk volume delivery method is fantastic for hydration, but I'm guessing it lacks the mechanical micro precision needed for tiny patients or like highly concentrated, dangerous drugs.
You hit the nail on the head. That is exactly where the veterinary syringe pump comes in. As the name suggests, this device doesn't use a hanging IV bag at all.
What does it use then?
You actually load a literal fluid-filled syringe directly into the machine.
Okay, wait, I want to picture how this actually works mechanically. The
Yeah.
machine is just physically pushing the plunger forward.
It is, but not with a standard motor. This is where it gets really cool. Inside, a high-quality syringe pump is a micro-stepper motor.
A micro-stepper motor, what does that mean?
Well, unlike a regular motor that spins continuously, a stepper motor moves in microscopic distinct increments.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it turns a threaded rod that pushes a mechanical arm against the syringe plunger by like fractions of a millimeter per hour.
Wow. So in treating a neonate like a newborn animal or an exotic pet like a small bird or a reptile, you can exert incredibly tight control.
You have to. You cannot afford even a millimeter of error with those patients. The syringe pump and its stepper motor provide that absolute control at very, very low volumes.
Okay, so is this basically the difference between using a garden hose for a dehydrated lawn versus a precision eyedropper for a delicate little house plant?
That is a perfect analogy, actually. Yeah. The garden hose delivers the bulk volume the lawn desperately needs to survive. But the eyedropper gives that tiny houseplant exactly the 3 drops of fertilizer it requires without drowning the roots.
Right, without totally overwhelming it. Okay, but if I'm looking at this purely from a technology standpoint, My gut instinct is to want maximum precision all the time.
Sure, that makes sense.
So why not just buy the precision syringe, pump the eyedropper, and use it for everything? Why even bother with the bag-based pump?
Well, it really comes down to the physical limits of the source container and just the sheer volume of fluid required.
What do you mean?
Think about it. A syringe, even a really large medical syringe, only holds around 60 milliliters maximum.
Oh, right.
So if you have that dehydrated Great Dane we talked about earlier, that dog might need liters of fluid over the course of a few hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah, 60 milliliters isn't going to cut it.
Exactly. If you tried to use a syringe pump for that, the veterinary staff would have to stand there and swap out a new, full 60 milliliter syringe every 3 minutes. It would be an impossible workflow.
Ah, I see. The garden hose can run all day because it's hooked up to a massive reservoir, the liter IV bag, while the eyedropper runs out almost immediately.
Exactly. And the bag-based infusion pump is specifically engineered to handle those higher flow rates safely.
How does it do that mechanically?
It usually uses a peristaltic mechanism.
Yeah.
Imagine mechanical fingers inside the machine that rhythmically massage and squeeze the plastic tubing to push the fluid along.
Okay, I'm picturing that. It's like milking the tube.
Yeah, exactly. It moves liquid fast, but those mechanical fingers simply can't push exactly 0.1 milliliters of a highly concentrated pain medication over an hour.
Right, they're too clunky for that.
Exactly. And that is why, in critical care settings, clinics actually combine them.
Yes. The sources mention that specifically. Like, a clinic might have an anesthetized patient receiving those bulk crystalloid fluids from a bag-based pump to keep their blood pressure stable.
Right.
While right next to it, a separate syringe pump is simultaneously delivering a powerful analgesic, like a painkiller, via a continuous rate infusion. You really just match the mechanical tool to the biological reality of the patient.
Precisely. But hardware only gets you so far, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, once you have the bags and syringes set up, you still have to account for the chaos of a living, breathing, unpredictable animal.
Ah, right. They aren't just inanimate objects.
No, they're moving, waking up, getting scared. So the internal software features of these pumps act as the invisible safety nets of veterinary medicine.
And man, the source document gives us an absolute alphabet soup of features to decode here.
It really does.
Let's start with one of the big ones, VTBI, or volume to be infused.
Right, VTBI. This is a critical software parameter. It basically allows the veterinary nurse to set a hard maximum amount of fluid to deliver, regardless of how much liquid is actually left in the source bag.
Okay, but if a bag has a liter of fluid in it, why not just let it run until the patient is fully hydrated? Why set a limit?
Because of patients with narrow fluid tolerances.
Like what?
Take a cat with an underlying heart condition, for example. Their cardiovascular system is already compromised.
Okay.
If you deliver too much fluid, the heart physically cannot pump the extra volume, so the fluid backs up into the lungs, triggering congestive heart failure.
Oh, wow. That's terrifying.
It is. So the VTBI setting guarantees the machine stops pumping the exact second that specific volume is reached. It prevents accidental over-delivery even if the staff is busy across the room.
So it's like an automatic shut-off valve.
Exactly.
But that assumes the fluid is successfully making its way into the patient in the first place, right? What happens if there's a blockage? The sources really emphasize the importance of occlusion alarms.
Yeah, an occlusion is simply a blockage in the line. And in veterinary medicine, this is huge. Your patients don't understand that they have an IV catheter in their arm.
Right. They just want to go home.
Exactly. So as they wake up, they move around, they bend a limb, they roll over and kink the plastic tubing.
But how does the machine actually know the line is kinked? I mean, it's just a motor pushing liquid blindly, isn't it?
Not quite. Inside the pump, there are highly sensitive pressure sensors resting right against the tubing.
Oh, interesting.
So when a dog bends its paw and kinks the IV line, the fluid has nowhere to go, but the motor keeps pushing for a split second, which causes the internal pressure in that plastic tubing to spike.
The tube actually swells up.
Exactly. The sensors detect that resistance, the physical swelling of the tube, and immediately trigger an alarm.
Because without that sensor, the motor might just keep straining.
Yeah. Or worse, the line bursts, or the patient stops getting their life-saving medication entirely, and the staff has no idea.
Right. So a strong occlusion alarm system helps the team identify a kinked line or a bent paw before the treatment is significantly delayed.
Exactly. And you also have error in line detection.
Oh, yeah. The sources brought that up. That's super dangerous, right?
Very. If a significant air bubble gets pushed into the bloodstream, it can cause an embolism, which can be fatal.
How does the pump catch that?
It actually uses ultrasonic sensors to prevent this.
Wait, ultrasonic? Like sound waves?
Yeah, sound waves travel differently through dense liquid than they do through an empty air bubble.
Oh, that is so clever.
Right. So when the sensor detects that sudden change in acoustic frequency, it halts the delivery instantly and sounds an alarm.
That's incredible. Okay, so speaking of alarms and stopping delivery, let's talk about the KVO function. Keep vein open.
Ah, yes, KVO.
The sources say this function kicks in after the programmed infusion is complete. So the VTBI limit we just talked about is reached, but instead of shutting down entirely, the pump keeps a tiny trickle going.
Yes, a very slow, continuous flow.
But wait, if the machine hits that maximum safety limit we just discussed, why not just shut down completely? Like, why does the KVO function exist at all? Isn't it like leaving a getaway car idling so the battery doesn't die?
That's a great way to put it, actually. To understand KVO, think about a river in the dead of winter.
Okay.
If the water stops moving entirely, it freezes solid. But if you keep just a tiny trickle flowing, the constant movement prevents the ice from forming.
Right.
KVO does exactly that, but for blood clots.
Because when you place an IV catheter into a vein, the body's natural response is to recognize the puncture wound, right? And it tries to heal it by forming a clot.
Exactly. As long as fluid is actively flowing out of the catheter and into the bloodstream, it washes away those clotting factors.
But the moment the flow stops,
the blood backs up into the tip of the catheter and clots. It freezes solid, to use your river metaphor.
So if the machine just powered off completely at the end of the infusion, the clinic staff might return 20 minutes later to find the catheter completely blocked.
Exactly. And then they'd have to remove the IV and poke the animal all over again with a new needle.
Oh, which causes unnecessary pain, wastes valuable medical materials, and just burns up crucial staff time.
Exactly. So the KVO function, that tiny continuous trickle, prevents the clot from forming while the team finishes up other tasks and prepares to reassess the patient.
Makes total sense. But, you know, even if that KVO trickle perfectly saves the dog's vein, it doesn't matter if the pump is entirely wrong for the room it's sitting in.
What do you mean by that?
Well, a pump acting perfectly in an ICU might be a total disaster in a dental suite. A veterinary hospital is basically a collection of microenvironments, each with totally different demands.
Oh, absolutely. The context is king here. Look at routine surgery, for example. The veterinary team is monitoring anesthesia, depth, blood pressure, ventilation, and temperature all at the exact same time.
So they're incredibly busy.
Very. The priority for an infusion pump in that setting is simple setup, reliable flow control, and visible alarms. They need to be able to glance across the room at the anesthesia station and instantly read the pump status without squinting or, you know, navigating through five different submenus.
Compare that to the critical care unit or the ICU. The demands scale up exponentially there.
Yeah, completely different world.
You might have a critically ill patient on vasopressors to keep their blood pressure up, a continuous pain drip, insulin, and liquid nutrition all running simultaneously.
Think about the physical chaos of that ICU environment. You have five different drips going into one animal.
Right.
If you use standard standalone pumps, you have five different heavy power cords plugged into the wall, creating a massive trip hazard, and five different digital screens with separate menus to navigate.
It sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
And actually, the source material highlights specific systems designed to solve this. They brought up the Mindre Benefusion line offered by BoMyMed.
Yes, that's a great example.
Which is highly relevant for clinics evaluating their equipment ecosystem right now. Rather than just a list of individual pumps, they offer a system centered around a docking station.
Right, and that docking station physically unifies the interface. Instead of those five tangling power cords, you slide the individual bag pumps like their EVP vet model, and the syringe pumps the ESP vet model into one scalable tower.
And it just uses a single power source.
Exactly. It physically changes how the space operates, turning a chaotic web of wires into a single organized unit where alarms and data can be managed centrally.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And then you have the hospital cages, like the recovery wards.
Mm-hmm.
The priorities shift again, right?
Yep.
Now it's about line security, making sure the waking animal can't pull the IV out,
mm-hmm.
and alarm audibility, because the staff might be at a central desk down the hall, so they need to hear if a pump in cage four detects an occlusion.
Exactly. You are constantly matching the technology to the microenvironment.
Okay, but if I'm looking at this from a systems level or thinking about how hospitals procure equipment, my gut instinct is to just future-proof.
Okay, how so?
Well, if the ICU pumps have all the most advanced precision, deep menus, and docking capabilities, Why is it a bad idea to just buy the absolute most advanced pump available and put it in every single room, just so you're covered for anything?
It seems logical to want the best technology everywhere. I get that. But overbuying actually creates severe workflow friction.
Really?
An ICU-level pump is inherently more complex. Mm. It has deeper menus, it requires more specific data entry, and involves more steps to start just a basic infusion.
So you put that highly complex machine in a room where they just do routine teeth cleanings, you are forcing the staff to navigate a complicated interface just to deliver basic hydration.
Exactly. You're slowing them down, and you are introducing the potential for confusion. Fast-paced, predictable procedures require fast-paced, intuitive tools.
That makes a lot of sense.
Overbuying for routine needs is just as detrimental as underbuying for complex care.
And I imagine that friction between the machine and the person using it is where the hidden costs really start to pile up. Like, a hospital might buy a pump that fits the room perfectly, but if they haven't accounted for the total cost of ownership and the human element, the entire system can still fail.
Oh, absolutely. The true cost of a veterinary infusion pump must be evaluated by risk, not just the upfront price tag. Yeah. Hidden costs are literally everywhere.
Like what?
Well, a bargain bin pump might have a battery that dies after 20 minutes off the charger, meaning you can't safely transport a patient down the hall.
Oh, wow.
And then you find out the proprietary replacement batteries cost an absolute fortune.
Or tubing compatibility, right? The sources mention some pumps require proprietary tubing, meaning you have to buy special, expensive Vivi lines exclusively from that one manufacturer instead of using the standard, affordable IV lines you already have stocked in the supply closet.
Exactly. And you can't just force standard tubing into a machine that requires proprietary sets.
Why not? A tube is a tube, isn't it?
Not to the machine. If the tubing isn't perfectly calibrated for the machine's internal rollers, those peristaltic fingers we mentioned earlier, it completely throws off the physics of the fluid delivery.
Oh, I see.
The machine might think it's delivering 10 milliliters an hour, but because the tube is slightly too thick or too thin, it's actually delivering 12.
Which could be a fatal overdose for a small animal. Or doesn't it also mess with the sensors? Like, it constantly triggers the occlusion sensors we talked about because the machine thinks the thicker tubing is actually a physical blockage.
Yes, which leads directly to nuisance alarms. The machine beeps constantly when nothing is actually wrong.
The boy who cried wolf.
Exactly. And this is where device quality directly intersects with human psychology. What happens to the staff in that situation?
I mean, they'd get super annoyed.
They develop alarm fatigue. They hear the pump in cage 3 beeping for the dozenth time that shift. They assume it's just another false alarm caused by mismatched tubing.
And they just ignore it.
They walk over, hit the silence button, and walk away without thoroughly checking the patient.
Wow. It's like, you know, when you hit snooze on your phone in the morning without even waking up, you just want the noise to stop.
Right.
But doing that here defeats the whole safety net. And actually, the source lists common causes of delivery failure, and almost all of them are human factors.
Oh, absolutely.
Like an IV line that wasn't fully primed with fluid, a door on the pump not closed properly, incorrect units entered into the keypad, or a patient just literally lying on top of the line. Silencing an alarm without resolving the root cause is so dangerous.
It is. But if the pump is unreliable, the human process becomes unreliable. A cheap pump with a bad interface creates tired, frustrated staff. And tired staff make mistakes.
Right.
That's exactly why total cost of ownership must account for usability and the quality of the interface. A reliable device requires a reliable process.
Bringing all these threads together, choosing a veterinary infusion pump is honestly a profound lesson in systems design.
It really is.
You are balancing the wild physical variance of the patients from the sheer bulk volume needed by a massive Great Dane to the microstepper precision required by a fragile ferret.
Yeah.
You're adapting to environmental demands, turning chaotic webs of wires into unified docking stations in the ICU while keeping things beautifully simple in the surgical suite.
And for anyone listening, whether you're evaluating a new tool, a new software platform, or a new system for a team, there is a broader takeaway here.
What's that?
You have to look past the spec sheet and the upfront cost. You must examine how this tool impacts the daily routines of the people who actually have to use it under pressure.
Right.
If it creates friction, if it triggers alarm fatigue, it really doesn't matter how advanced the internal features are. It has to fit the workflow.
That is such a good point. It's all about the intersection of the machine and the human monitoring it, which actually leaves me with one final kind of provocative thought based on this source material.
Oh,
Let's hear it.
Right now, veterinary nurses are the ones catching the alarms, adjusting the flow rates, checking the patients. But as technology continues to advance, what happens when these infusion pumps eventually integrate directly with AI-driven patient monitors?
Oh man, that is absolutely the next frontier.
Imagine if the pump can automatically adjust its own flow rate because an AI system detects a dog's real-time blood pressure dropping.
Right.
Or it senses a dangerous spike in heart rate. If the machine can make those clinical adjustments instantaneously without waiting for an alarm to be heard across the room, how will that entirely change the role of the veterinary nurse?
It's a huge paradigm shift.
Right. It's no longer about managing the equipment. It's about managing the AI that is managing the equipment. It really makes you wonder. Something to think about for sure.
It's a fascinating future to consider, definitely.
Well, the next time you picture a hospital, remember, it's not always just a standard adult in the bed. Sometimes it takes an entire symphony of specialized bags, precision syringes, and some very clever sensors just to safely care for a massive mastiff and a tiny iguana.
Very true.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.